This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Matthew Jide, CEO, NTT Security.
Yes, hi. Matthew Jide, President and CEO of NTT Security Division.
When Jason Goodall stood up last year to brief all the media about what was happening with NTT Limited, now everything was coming together, he made what has become a fairly infamous statement now, and that is he didn't see any need, in a global sense, for more than five SOCs. What's he talking about and what does that actually mean?
That's looking at our infrastructure. So we've obviously been going since July 1st. A lot of the time that we've spent over the last 120 odd days is really looking at what infrastructure have we got, because some of that we knew about, some of it we didn't know about. What are the legislators doing in the market? What are they talking about? Where should we have these SOCs? And then we really look at SOCs in two different components. The first component is the hardware, the software, the cloud base, where we transact and where we do our processing of the logs that we see and the incident response. Our second component is people. People sitting in physical offices, watching screens and reacting to monitoring, things like that. Over the last couple of years, the R&D team within the security division have done a fantastic job of developing machine learning and artificial intelligence, writing the algorithms and applying those algorithms to where we're getting to the stage when a log file comes in, if the machine's seen it before, it can take the action that needs to be done. That action might be contain or lock down, do this, do nothing. We've seen that before. We know there's no impact. Do nothing to that one. A lot of that comes back to understanding the context of our client as well. What environment are they running? What sort of tooling devices? Maybe there's a piece of malware there that's never going to work because they're on a completely Linux platform, whatever it may be. We've put in a lot of time and effort. NTT as a company spends $3.6 billion a year on R&D. A lot of our focus has been around the machine learning. What that then translates to is in most SOCs, you've got a level one engineer, a level two engineer, and then maybe your level three analysts. You know, level one collects the log, an alert gets set off, collects it, documents it, maybe puts it into a system, an ITSM system, then it moves to level two, who tries to look at it and address it. And level three is obviously the people that are pulling it apart, exploding it in sand pits and understanding what it's trying to do. The machine learning and artificial intelligence means that we're doing a lot of that work that level one and level two via machine. Machines are faster. They see it's a black or white. We've seen that before, isolate. We haven't seen that before, pass through. What that means is as we're doing that with the machine, we're really moving our ones and twos into threes. So we're transitioning our knowledge base into more people, moving to the level three. What it also means is we're not necessarily hiring in level ones and level twos as the machine takes on more of the work. What that in turn means is we've got facilities that are literally sitting empty. We had two facilities here in the US, one of which is in the process of being shut down because we didn't have any capacity in that facility. If we look at the facility in Singapore, I think we had maybe seven people sitting in that. It was not expanding. When Jason talks about a number of SOCs, we're looking to address client problems, but the staff that we need in those physical SOCs is reducing. In terms of the technology, we're going to have that wherever we need to have it, based on legislation, compliance, whatever it may be.
But that compliance becomes part of a problem for you here. If I look at one of your competitors who I spoke to a number of years ago, they were opening a SOC in Germany. They had a real problem onboarding customers because they had no level three analysts in Germany. They needed to be based in Germany because of the rules that the German government has set down. That, at the time, was the exception. It's fast becoming the norm. How do you get in country those level three analysts such that you can begin to triage? Because if we go back 3-4 years when you were a small entity as part of a larger NTT body, you could maybe get away with that. Now you're part of NTT Limited with a vast data center array, a huge customer base. You can't afford to not have those level threes in country if those customers are there.
Yes. We're starting to address government requirements and really take a deep look at that. I wish it was as easy as reading the 300-page documents that they put out, but it's the interpretation of what that means as well. There's some open-ended bits in it. There's some that's confusing. But our strategy in approaching that is to create a concept of socklets. Think of them as small teams, a center of excellence. And in the past, had people spread around. So bringing these small teams together in a single office, within a facility that maybe the rest of NTT is operating out of, securing that space, putting the right passing, the right cards, the fingerprints, noise proofing, putting mesh in the walls, but a smaller space. That'll allow us to address that exact problem. There's a lot of confusion in Europe at the moment with Brexit and what's that mean. We've always addressed our compliance issues in Europe by having two major SOCs and a secondary SOC. The major SOC would be in Thiel and in Sweden, which is obviously outside of the EU, but at times they were allowed to work with the EU. And then we had a small SOC in Germany. We had that small SOC there to address German specific issues. The problem was we had a big space, which wasn't necessarily what we needed because the machines are starting to make those decisions. I would maybe argue a lot of the decisions that a level three analyst would have made in the past is now being made by the machine. So do I need the machine in a specific country? Do I need the machine learning, the language, the algorithms? What is it that we actually need to do there? And that's an area that we're investigating, not only for our own use, but so we can help educate the market as well. Whilst compliance is compliance, there's a lot of emotion around compliance, and what's written isn't something necessarily that's always interpreted. Getting through the fog of that, helping us to understand that much better than we do at the moment. We've got a CISO group within NTT that is very engaged with the major governments around the world. Our CISO who runs that is quite often in Washington or is in London, working very closely with that. Probably most of our competitors are doing and legislators are doing just to make sure that we're compliant with the rules of a country or a region.
I'll stay with the technology piece first and come back to people in a second. Once you start to build machine learning systems to do this, you are obviously using data. There's only so much decomposition that we can do to data to make it anonymous. But as we start to add different pieces, anonymity becomes a variable thing. It doesn't take a lot of data to completely remove the anonymous state. As you begin to build these systems out and you then look at the different socklets and socks you have, the power is actually in having all that information being reviewed by a larger, almost a central machine learning AI type solution. But you can't move that data out of a number of those countries. So how do you create effectively a virtual space in which those machine learning systems can work together?
That's a great question, and one that we're trying to overcome. The key thing is we anonymize data when we get the data. There's mechanisms that we're using in the machine to take out headers and to take out any proprietary information that may be in that piece. Then we run the machine learning, the artificial intelligence locally. How do we get it up to a global basis? A lot of that analytics that we're doing on a global basis is from traffic that we see from the internet, not from our corporate clients. We can do that learning at a global level. Let's call it a single system, although it's multiple systems, but then push that learning from the global piece down to the local piece. But then the local piece, if that's learning something that we haven't seen before, can also push it back up. I'm sure there's much more technical terms I could have used for all of that, Ian, but that's essentially what we're doing. The other thing that we're doing as part of this merging and NTT Limited being created, there were several other companies that got created at the same time. My view of the world is a couple of years sort of thing. We're working with clients, long-term relationships, but really about what is available today that we can work with a client around. We've got NTT Ventures that's more that mid-term look at things. What NTT Ventures does is find early-stage companies that we can invest in as NTT and potentially leverage that technology as well. The next one we've got is around NTT R&D. There's a special facility being set up here in the US, and one of their areas of research at the moment is around encryption. My colleague Gomi-san, who's the CEO over at NTT R&D, has a great big long name for that. But think of it as partial encryption of a document. Imagine you've got a document, and instead of being one key, so you can get access to that using the one key exchange, it's got maybe 25 keys. You can only access the content in that document that your key allows. Now, you might have 24 keys and be able to see most of the document, but in that case, the 25th key maybe talks about or unlocks the personal information. Mathematically, they've proven that that works. They've got to now apply it, which is, I'm told, a different thing. There's research going on like that that could potentially help us overcome the problem that you're talking about. Could we go to governments and say, this is our proposal in terms of the net value of taking those files and having a centralized processing of it, wherever that centralized processing may be, is going to be incrementally better for the client than it would be if we just leave them there. Because we're not going to be able to standardize. German companies do deal with businesses outside of Germany. What if we could take all of those learnings that we're learning across all of the organization and have a single outcome for that? That's where we partner with NTT R&D to help push the envelope in terms of what we can do there.
Staying on that technology side, secure by design is a big message for you. You and I have spoken in the past about the transition from being purely reactive to trying to be real-time. You've also made this announcement with Palo Alto this week. How do you incorporate all that technology and get your partners on board? Because rather than build everything yourselves, you've clearly seen the value of a partnership system. But there then becomes an issue of how do you share that technology in a real-time world? There becomes a need to share threat intelligence, threat data, which again brings us back to this control and data sovereignty.
That's a complicated question. Secure by design, let's address that first. NTT Limited is much bigger than just the security business. We represent about 15% of the overall revenue of the bigger company. What we've seen for many years is that there's inherent risk in a client buying any type of technology, not just security, but a new database, a router, a switch, or whatever it may be. The concept of secure by design is let's have a secure infrastructure. Let's look at it from a secure employee. How can we drive secure outcomes for that particular slice of area? It's resonating in the market at the moment. Clients are looking at it and saying, okay, we buy into that. What can we do to help that? That really is the industry as a whole. Security used to be the no guys, and I think we've spoken about that before. Security now is at the inception of a program, a policy, a product, an application, whatever it may be. With security getting involved early, we can really start to lock security into whatever the client's doing, really helping drive that. Now, the big RSA conference, which is held in San Francisco once a year, over 1,000 OEMs there displaying their wares. As a client, do you really care which one of those ones you use? Because some of them do very similar things. What you as a client really are worried about is your risk profile. First, you have to understand what your risk threshold is. Then you need to say, okay, that's our threshold, so this is what our profile looks like. Then you're looking for a service level agreement with a partner, or you're going to do it yourself. Maybe you just buy technologies. I know some of the partners don't necessarily like me for saying this, but I envisage a world where the brand of the technology that we're using isn't necessarily something that the client's buying. Imagine this, in my view, in a couple of years' time, security will be a service. There won't be a concept of a physical hardware box. And I say that for a couple of reasons. Firstly, the technology just can't keep up. Once you've got a box there, within minutes of you landing that and installing it, there's already a better version or grade or bigger chipset available. Once you've got it up and running, you can't necessarily take it down every couple of days to put new chipsets in it. So that model doesn't work for security. We're already seeing budgets not necessarily shrinking for your physical box, but they're not growing. They're fairly static. But what we are seeing is security budgets being spun up in different parts of the business where the CISO is taking on more of an advisory role. This is how you're going to secure it. Being involved earlier at that point of inception. The dynamism of the world is changing in security. Imagine on Monday morning you wake up and the client has a new application they're pushing out. They need 3 new firewalls, just as an example. What if they could go to a marketplace and just go, oh, look, there's one at $2, there's one at $1, and there's one at 99 cents. You know, this application isn't critical to my infrastructure. I'm really looking at a layer 3 type firewall. Maybe I'll get the 99 cent one instead of the $2 one. In that sort of world, brands of the manufacturer start to disappear a little bit and becomes more, how are you going to deliver that to me? How are you going to configure it, manage it, maintain it?
That's a very interesting position, because one of your challenges is that if I look over the number of years I've covered NTT and the associated companies, Dimension Data, NTT Communications, the whole 31 companies that's been coming to NTT Limited, there's been an awful lot of white labeling of products. At a risk of being told off, there's also to some degree been an awful lot of misrepresentation of those products, where business units have pushed a product but not necessarily truly understood what they were pushing and competing with other business units. As you start to move away from brand, how much does that make it easier to remove all of the history, get all the customers onto a single level playing field that you can then move forwards, particularly as you move towards real time?
Yes, fantastic question. And I think most organizations of size and scale have similar sorts of issues. If we'd grown organically as a single company and grown out that way, maybe the technologies would be better aligned. I mean, the 31 companies with the 31 existing brands under those companies, I'm sure there was many, many more companies that have all had their own ERP, CRM, ticketing systems. Yeah, the list goes on. Now, over the last, I guess it's 3 years, maybe a little bit more than 3 years, there's been a standards body, for want of a better word, within the larger NTT, even before NTT Limited came together. What sort of ERP platform we're going to use? Everybody started to standardize on that platform. What sort of CRM? Everyone started to standardize. The big area for us that we were specifically concerned about was ticketing. So as an organization, we've got one standard ticketing system that we use in one partner. We have different versions, so to your point, we will get all of those 2 current versions. Now, we also have internally, the one thing in security, but also the other businesses, is giving clients visibility. They want to be able to see, you've raised a ticket, great, I want to be able to click down and see what that means. Within the organisation, we've got a concept called Managed Centre, which we've won awards for in the past. That is becoming our single standard portal that we'll use. A client, if they subscribe to the different services that we've got, can see all of the services literally in one panel. Sometimes it might be a big screen if they buy them all, but within that panel, they can get access to all of the services that they've bought. Now, we've been on that journey as Entity Security for probably the last 12 months. All of our systems talk into that portal. As we were discussing just prior to the interview starting, we've finished the migration of all of our clients from multiple different platforms to a single platform. That happened today, of all days, which was fortunate. Ian, you hear that, you're the first one to hear the news. That was a milestone and achievement for the organization as well. When you really consider, we've been together 150 days now. We made it. We budgeted for it to be in March this year, and we said that maybe we could make it by the end of February. Being a leap year, I can say we made it by 2 days instead of 1 day. So that's just a fantastic outcome for the guys. So that's a lot of external interchange with clients where we're standardizing platforms around that. In terms of the technology and what I build, I'm often looking at log files very differently to my colleagues in different areas of the business. So we're really there to find the anomalies. Theoretically, we want to see the data that isn't stopped by a firewall. I want to see the data flows that are getting through. What's going on there? Let's have a look at those. There will continue to be discrete technologies that we either build, buy, partner, or invest in that we use as our different service units. Where we can get commonality, we're absolutely on that journey. For Entity Security, anyway, we're mostly integrated with a larger platform. We also have this concept of services layer. Our services layer is our busing technology and how it pulls microservices. We've got a whole agile development model where we have program increments on a 90-day basis. We work through what do we need to integrate into the busing layer, then we have the program, the people assigned to it, and then that moves forward. We're going through that. We're not there yet, but we will be there probably by mid-year. We should be fully integrated into the busing layer as well. That should help us with the experience, the speed, how we contain and look at files.
I said I'd return to the people bit. As you know, the people bit is always important to me. You're moving your level ones to level two, your level twos to level three. You said you're not actively recruiting at the moment, but we have a problem in the way we staff SOX. Historically, our diversity has been poor. And I'm not talking here about gender or race. I'm talking as much about our cultural diversity, our diversity of skills. If you're not actively recruiting because you're in the process of moving one to two, two to three, because the machines are taking the bottom end, how do you improve the diversity of your teams? And does this solve your problem of not having enough skilled people?
Yes, we are hiring people. We're just not hiring level one people because the machine has primarily taken that role over, and we can skill net new people into the organization backwards far easier than we can forwards, if that makes sense. The more you've been in the market, the more experienced you are. Getting that diversity, it's a really interesting question and something that I would probably argue a lot of organizations even still today haven't even necessarily ventured there. There's other issues that have tried to be solved. Where we are lucky, I believe, is that we've got a global footprint. If we stumble into that area where we don't have that diversity in the organization, we've still got other countries that we operate in where the nature of the people might be different, their thought pattern, how they think about things. Some regions, schooling or education is very much, here's the book, go and learn it back to front and you'll know everything you need. Other regions, education is more about you figure out your pace you want to learn at and you go and learn it yourself, we'll give you guidance. Very different cultural elements there as well. Having that global footprint helps us a little bit there. We ensure that our people are constantly talking to each other. We've obviously got people that live in other regions that want to come and work in a different region, and whether that's a six-month time frame, a two-year time frame, we have that exchange program in place that we can do that. That's really valuable when we start to build out this concept of centers of excellence. Having threat detection, let's take that piece for instance. Brains need to be really thinking together and cohesive. If we had them spread out all over the world, they're using telephones, email, so it becomes a very non-personal integration. We've found by having that team together and face-to-face, even if there's people who work remote from that team, as long as they're in the office on a regular basis, we get a lot more productivity out of that team. They're constantly questioning each other. The great thing about the security industry is everybody's got a view and let's work it through, but then ultimately let's get the right outcome that's going to happen. I think that diversity we do okay at. I wouldn't say we're fantastic, but absolutely we've got our people and culture team looking at how can we do this better. We bring in outside consultants to look at it. We're an education-led organization as well, would probably be my final point. We've invested heavily in tools that people can use to load training systems into educational programs, all of that. We sit with individuals and work through learning paths. Maybe you're a level one engineer in our SOC that knows that the level one roles are slowly disappearing, certainly not getting replaced, but wants to move to a level two. That's great. Maybe an individual's not ready at this stage, but if you go and do these courses, then you'll be ready. We can link those courses together to say, okay, over the next 6 months, do these courses, make sure you turn up to work on time and do all the things because you're more senior. And that allows us like a really programmatic way to grow people within the organization, but also to give them opportunities. We get as an organization that people aren't going to stick with us forever and ever. People are going to want to experience the world. What we do see is when people leave and go and experience the world, a lot of the time they come back. Over the years in all the different companies, we've created many different cultures. I think maybe some of the cultures were falling apart just because of the process of all of these organizations coming together. But getting that culture right is absolutely critical to us because we want that talent to come back. Go out, experience the world, have different experiences, work in different areas, and then you come back with different ideas on how to do things. So a big fan of if you've been here before, you know the systems and the people and how it works, it'd be great to have you back.
One of the things we saw last week was Nominate's CISO survey. One of the things that pulled out in particular is a lot of CISOs would take a pay cut to reduce the number of unpaid hours they do. When they drilled down into that, what became clear was that the CISO role for a lot of people is a very undefined role. I'd argue for an awful lot of security analysts at level 3 or maybe even the level 1, level 2 personnel, there's a lot of blurry lines in the definition of their job. As you start to grow people, educate people, and look to build a workforce that wants to come back, how hard is it to actually build a job definition around working in cybersecurity?
Oh, what a brilliant question. Let me firstly be clear, I'm not a CISO. I'm nowhere near smart enough to do that. Or maybe my skin's not thick enough to deal with all the battering that you take. But 100% agree. Other titles within the industry have done a much better job of defining what it is. So if there's a CTO, the Chief Technology Officer, kind of four broad categories that those people, either market-facing, internal-facing, etc. I don't think they've done that in the CISO function because a board, a CEO, kind of looks at it and goes, we've got a technical issue, it must be the CISO, and it's because somebody turned it off. It's not a breach. What role do you want to play? The scope of the CISO has grown. The CISO initially came in as maybe the person that was buying or making the technology decisions for security. You've got these systems, I need to buy these security controls in order to protect those systems. That then led over into the risk world because the board started questioning the budget. Why should I buy that one? Our risk is here. Then they became the chief risk officer. It's everything from implementation through to risk and compliance. It's a very confusing, complicated world. The poor CISO, even if they did take a pay cut, and pretty much guaranteed most organizations aren't going to allow them to work less hours. So how do we do that within the SOC and our analyst community? We're always open for people taking on more. It's always nice when individuals want to learn and grow themselves. But we've got our job definitions, for want of a better word, that we constantly look at. Our people and culture team are constantly reviewing those. And they look a little bit different by regions as well, because there's different contexts to different regions and what it should look like. I guess what we use the definition of the role for is to set the context in. This is kind of where we want you to operate. But there's nothing to say you can't operate outside of the box as long as the job's getting done that we need to get done. So I'm a big fan of people taking on self-learning projects. If you're taking on an investigation of an attack vector, partner up with someone more senior and help them to coach you through it.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Matthew. Thank you.
Thank you, Ian. Much appreciated.